Match Boy. Overlooking Phoenix. From high above in the Star Worldwide Network studios. Badge Boys. Stories, insight, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. And now, here they are, the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to another edition of the Badge Boys, where two retired cops talk to the community. I'm retired silent witness sergeant Darren Birch.
I'm retired Phoenix police officer Jason Schechterly.
And we have another stellar show. Our guest this week is a Texas deputy. His name is Craig Darlow from the Houston area. And he responded to a horrific, horrific rollover crash. Cars upside down, body parts everywhere. And he saved the tiniest of humans. I can't wait to talk to him about that. Then after that, we're going to go into cop talk where Jason and I are going to talk about these mass shootings. And guess what? We might have the answer. No joke. And then the last segment is going to be heroic headlines, stupid suspects galore, and of course, the inspirational close by our very own Jason. So stay tuned, stay informed, and most of all, you're going to be entertained.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADOT in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Jason, I'm so excited about this segment, and you don't know it, but you made this happen, my friend. A couple weeks ago, you had mentioned to the audience, because we have a lot of people that listen to us all over the country.
Yes.
And you had mentioned, hey, if you guys out there have a story you want to bring on, get a hold of us. Well, one of our listeners I've had some ongoing communication with. In fact, he even gave us a stupid suspect story.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Right? Right? And so I was talking to him. And I said, hey, you have a story. I mean, every cop has a story. And he said, you know how a lot of cops are.
Oh, yeah.
They're very humble. They yes. don't want to, pat themselves on the back. And I said, are you up for any kind of awards or something? He said, well, it's funny you mentioned that. I am up for a presidential award. Kind of a big deal.
What?
Right?
You think?
So I said, hey, you got to come on the show. It's a great topic. It's a topic near and dear to your heart, Jason. It has to do with crashes.
Yes, it is.
And those who have read my book know that I was not involved in a crash, but I was the bystander and tried to save some people. And unfortunately, a young woman burned to death in my crash. I don't know if you can throw a rock without hitting someone that's either been involved with cancer or a crash.
Or seen it. Yeah. And either you've been involved, especially where we live. I think everybody's been involved in at least one because there's 100 of them a day. But you've seen it. You've witnessed it. You've either driven by and then thought about it, or you've actually seen it happen. And I can tell you a story, which I might that happened recently, that still, after all these years, caused me a great deal of like anxiety and jumping into action. And the things, I must have sounded like I was crazy when I called 911, and I'm like, roll fire 962. I'm screaming all these things. Because they do. They affect you.
They do.
They affect you very, very bad. And I was a homicide detective. Those things affect you. Car crashes are unique. There's just, they're devastating because
they affect
everyone. And we're
going to
talk
into
it. So
everyone.
I thank you for bringing on our guests, and let's introduce him.
Well, we have Deputy C. Darlow, which C stands for Craig, and he's from the Harris County Sheriff's, and that's basically the Houston area.
Yes, Harris County.
And I have the U.S. Presidential Medal of Valor submission form, so I'm going to read from it directly.
All right.
Deputy C. Darlow observed a silver minivan on its roof, resting on top of a Honda Accord passenger car, which was also resting on its roof. Vehicles were smoking as motor fluids, to include oil, were leaked up on the ground nearby. Deputy C. Darlow went to the south side of the vehicles, observing a young Hispanic female female that appeared to be deceased on the grassy area south of the roadway. A cover was placed over her upon no signs of life. As the vehicles involved in the accident continued to smoke, numerous bystanders were screaming that there were people trapped inside the cars, specifically a baby.
Oh.
And this is where we're going to bring in Craig. Craig, thank you for joining us, my friend.
Pleasure. Thank you guys for having me.
And you know, before we start this off, we have to mention something. He is actually sitting in a car right now. What kind of car are you sitting in? Can you tell us?
It's the Harris County Sheriff's Department Patrol car.
You have just made Robin's
day. Yeah, you have made Robin's entire day. We can shut the show down right now. And Robin, Robin is good because you are in your car.
She's visualizing this.
It's live.
Yeah, I got
live
approval to pull over and do the interview.
So. He's in his patrol car. Guys, can you? This is like totally cool.
So tell us, what is the duty of a Harris deputy? Harris deputy, what is your basic duties, if you will?
Harris County is a patrolman. Our primary duties are to, answer calls for service and be proactive to prevent any calls or respond to anything that we see that happens within our view. So, yeah, I've been doing this almost 30 years and love doing it. 56. I'm going to do a few more and then I'm done. But it's still a calling.
And I also to say thank you for your service because you're also in the Army.
Yes, sir. I was with the Army 10th Mountain Division for a few years and very dear to my heart and still stay in touch with all my brothers from there.
Army.
Thank you for your service. But I will say, talking to you and looking at Darren, the two Army guys, knowing that I joined the Air Force, I am feeling a little more intelligent than I was 30 minutes ago, because the Air Force is the way to go. So with that,
you know, I was just going to say, I'm sorry you couldn't pass the test.
Wait a second. I'm going to chime in.
And the Air Force is kind of like a military branch too, isn't
it?
Kind of.
Wait a minute.
The woman
you have at the controls has a father who came from the Air Force and a son who was a flight crew chief
in
the Air Force.
Yes.
It's two against two. I'm sorry. Hey, Craig, we digressed.
I want you to take us, first of all, let's put this into perspective. The Presidential Valor Award is one of the highest honors.
Huge deal.
In the entire United States. But if you could take us back to the beginning and of this call, in my old school way of thinking, I have this terminology of on view, where you witness something or you see something or you maybe heard it from a half mile away. Was this a radio call for you that you happened to be right down the street, or did you witness this in some way? And if you could take us through not only the progression of events, but what you felt and what you were thinking, because I know what I probably know what you were thinking and feeling, but I want our listeners to understand the human side of this, not just the uniform and training side.
Yes, sir. Actually, you know, it was a quiet day. We had just finished lunch and was getting back out into the patrol cars when one of the units I was having lunch with got on the radio, very excited that he just on-viewed this major accident. So I was about 30 seconds out, made the corner to find the two vehicles upside down on top of each other and pouring gasoline and whatnot out, smoking. So I grabbed the fire extinguisher. And people had already started gathering around and were screaming that there were people inside and that they saw baby seats. So I dropped the fire extinguisher and got in through the back of the van. And there were also civilians there that were making an attempt to get in through the side, but there was just no way due to the condition of the vehicle. So I crawled up through the back of the van, found the baby seat behind the driver's seat. And there was a small infant that was covered in blood and glass. It was wedged up underneath the driver's seat. So I was able to manipulate the baby out of the seat belts and get her out and pulled her back out, handed her to a civilian that was standing by so I could finish getting out of the vehicle, took the baby over to the side of the road and started to assess her. And as I was wiping the glass and blood off her face, she opened her eyes. And, you know, by the grace of God, there was a doctor there. She took over.
Wow.
Went back into the van. The mother was hanging upside down. Seatbelt, was partially wrapped around her neck. So I crawled inside and cut her free with a pocket knife, and I couldn't pull her out due to the jagged metal and whatnot from the roof. So I laid with her until the fire department and ambulance and whatnot got there, and they were able to extricate her and treat her, you know, at that point. So we had life flighted, or we had called for life flight for the baby and the mother. There was another gentleman in the other vehicle that was deceased that we couldn't get out or even get to until the cars were eventually separated. He was 75. The mother of this van was 42. The baby was 18 months, and the deceased was 18 years old. I actually found out that the mother went to pick up the girl from high school because she wasn't feeling well and was literally 1,000 feet from their apartment. The father walks up on scene, and thankfully we had the young lady covered up, and he asked us, almost catatonic, is that my daughter? And I explained to her that it was. And we have all the people that want to come by and take pictures and videos, and it just infuriates me that there were so many people there, but only very few attempted to help. So he wanted to see her. I advised against it, that it was a crime scene, and took the opportunity at that time to go put him in my patrol car. We talked for a little while, and he asked to go pick up his younger daughter, who I believe was in second grade. So I escorted him to the school, picked up his little girl, and brought him home and explained to him everything that was going on, and gave him my card if there was anything that I could do for him further, and went back to the scene to continue helping, in any way I can, because we had already have our traffic division out there that specialize, and they're the ones that are in charge of these type of accidents. So I followed up with some officers later that evening to find out the status of the baby. Ends up that the mother and the child both live. The baby had a pretty severe brain bleed, but after a little while in the Texas Children, she recovered. Haven't seen him since. There is a local business, George and Dahlia, who own a Galaxy Automotive out here, and they had come to me and asked me about, getting together and trying to do something for the family. And I said, well, yeah, absolutely, of course. Let's go to them and see what we can do about burying their daughter and, subsequent medical bills. Well, found out through George, who is Hispanic, that through the father, that they were not here legally and did not want to talk to me. So I explained to him that, I'm not here as a cop. I'm here to help you and to just try and get some closure and help you bury your daughter, pay medical bills. He refused, didn't want any attention at all. So, that's really heartbreaking, that nowadays the media so much likes to portray law enforcement as the bad guys and we're trying to separate everybody. And that's not the fact at all, especially in situations like this. I work for the third largest sheriff's department in the United States, stellar command staff. Our Sheriff Ed Gonzalez and Chief Edison Topeka, Daryl Coleman, Tim Navarro, these are all good friends of mine that I grew up through the ranks with. And, it's not the good old boy system to where they're appointed. These guys earned their positions because they care. They put the county first. They put the deputies' care, as paramount. And, it needs to be brought out that that this type of action is not unseen, that there are many of us that try and do this, but it's never produced. The media so much doesn't report the news as they make it most of the time.
Craig, to your point regarding the heartfelt nature of the job, what we do as cops, I can tell you firsthand, when I read your submission form, I noted the spot where you took the father and took him to the school so he could pick up his daughter. And why that touched my heart is one of the hardest things I ever had to do, on top of finding my son passed away, is then going to school, picking up my daughter, and telling her. And the idea that this gentleman, this father, this grieving father, had you as a support mechanism, had you drive him, it was a horrible drive. and to have a police officer, a deputy, drive him. So tell me about that drive. Tell me about the dialogue you had with him to the school and how appreciative I'm sure he was.
Oh, absolutely. You know, with broken English and limited Spanish, you know, I know enough to get married. So we were able to, have a conversation. And, you know, I'm also a volunteer chaplain. I started a death notification unit here in 2012 to where we're on call 24/7. We do in-person death notifications instead of by telephone. I felt that it was horrible. I've lost two brothers. I've lost a brother-in-law in the line of duty. And to get that phone call is horrible.
Oh, I'm with you. You always do it in person. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, my friends thought I was crazy, but, you know, I tell them, would you rather have somebody like me that has a compassion and a care for you opposed to a deputy that does not want to be there, that's going to be very short and to the point, this is your case number, call the ME's office, they'll explain to you. You know, so I've sat with the people, I've prayed with them, I've gotten cards and letters from people, you know, that I never expect at all, you know, especially in the worst time of their lives. But going through that type of training, it allows me the grace to sit with somebody like that and to listen to them and to be an ear for them. You know, I don't try and interject any type of religious beliefs on them, but I'm there if they want to.
And I love it.
So the biggest part of being a chaplain is listening.
Yeah, amen. That's and next to kid notifications, thank you for the service you provided. That I've had to do way more than I even care to share about. It's
the worst job of homicide.
Well, probably the most immense power that I've ever felt is sitting in front of somebody's driveway, knowing that when you knock on that door, you completely change their life forever, and you wait that extra 2 minutes or 5 minutes, just like give them that extra peace. But it should never, ever be done over the phone. And
oh, God, no.
I know a lot of departments get that wrong, and I want to thank you very much for not only your service as a chaplain and the compassion that you find in that lane, but just simply doing it in person, doing something the right way that... As the years go by, as time heals, that's what people remember is the person who was there and how they handled it.
Yeah. So regardless of how... Go ahead, my friend, please.
I was going to say, I get sick to my stomach every time I knock on a door.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's horrible. It was my least favorite part of the job. Horrible.
I have to ask...
Go ahead, sir.
Oh, I have to ask, what happened with that accident? Did they reconstruct it? Did they figure out how it came about?
Yes, absolutely. These type of accidents are done through laser measurements, you know, mathematics that are far above my level. But these guys are fantastic at what they do. And what had happened was it was a 72-year-old female driver who's headed down the service road of the freeway. For whatever reason, she drifted off. Her tires got caught in the grass. It directed her through the intersection, but off to one side, if you know what I mean. The van was parked at a red light waiting to go through. This car came straight at him from the side. It hit the median, which caused it to go airborne, and it went through the back of the van. So the infant was sitting in the middle of the middle seat, and the 18-year-old was on her right. So on impact, it ejected the female, the 18-year-old. And then because of the momentum, the car was stuck in the van and it caused them to roll over together with the van being on top of the car. There were no charges filed. There was no other than the Class C violation, the ticketed offense of failed to maintain a single mark lane. There was no alcohol. There was no foreign substances, no illegal drugs, anything like that. It was simply a horrific accident, and there was no charges,
and there's nothing that the occupants or the driver in the van could have done.
No, not at all, because of where they were positioned and no escape route. They probably never saw it coming.
Horrible. I can't help but think how thankful that father is that you were there, and the drive to the school that just touched my heart, saving that baby, saving them, and all this while people or have their phones and filming. In the 2 minutes that we have left, do you want to weigh in on how disgusting that is, to seeing something like that? That I call it the loss of humanity.
What's wrong with people?
Definitely. You know, after I dropped the father off and went back to the scene, our medical examiner was there, and they carry these portable walls. So we put up the wall so that we could roll the young lady over, and people were actually trying to go down the parking lot and out into the street so that they could look around the wall and still video and taking pictures. So I was, even as a chaplain, I'm not the most well-spoken person in situations like that. And I screamed at him.
Your army came out.
Held back and and let him look. And now go sleep.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Enjoy your sleep.
Yeah, exactly. And enjoy the rest of your day. You this was your curiosity. You got to be kidding me. That's that's horrible.
The things that we see without a dynamic family value, you know, my wife and my two kids, you know, my son's 13, Seth, he's my little sports stud, and my daughter's 8, little gymnastic champion. You know, I've been married to my wife for 22 years this month, been together for 24. You know, awesome. She's an incredible and accomplished woman, but without having the family dynamics, this is a tough job, and you have to get past that type A personality that most of us have, that nothing hurts us,
right?
Because it does.
It does.
And you have to be willing to talk. Yeah, you have to be willing to talk to someone about it. And sometimes, you know, it's through crude cop humor, but it's a mechanic that helps you get through it. But, you know, having family there, I don't ever bring my job home. My wife sees me come home sometimes a little bit quiet and just ask, did something happen today? And that's my response. Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's it.
Hey, Craig, that's a wonderful story. Best of luck with the submission. You absolutely are worthy.
When does the award get presented?
Do we have a date?
When do we find out who
can
wins?
We vote? Can
hate,
we vote?
I hate using that term.
Slow down,
wins,
guys.
when do we find out?
I'm very humbled by it that, you know, a couple of the supervisors thought enough to do something like that. I was originally told it was going to be turned into our local 100 club, but, you know, things fall through the crack and it didn't happen. But, you know, that's not why we do it. But with that type of prestigious award, you know, Darren and I have talked about that. I don't think it merits that type of award, simply because it's what we're supposed to do. I was there. I did what I had to do. And the people that have received this award in the past, you know, those are full blown heroes. But my understanding, the way the process works is through the submissions, they're looked at, vetted, and if in fact this did go through, it would be sometime next year.
Well, okay. Again, congratulations for just being submitted. Again, I want to remind the listeners that this car was smoking, and you dropped a fire extinguisher to put your life in danger by jumping in that van. And I know Jason across the aisle from me has strong opinions on that.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to what it takes to put yourself in that position. I don't care what uniform you're wearing, what job you're doing, fight or flight syndrome is, until you're faced with it, you don't know what you're going to do. But I will tell you right now, Craig, and I hope you stay in touch with me. I hope you let me know. But if, I know you're humble, and I love that, but if you get this award, I am giving you my word right now, I will be there in person to watch you receive it.
Brother, that'd be awesome. And, you know, if you do end up moving out here to the Galveston area, then you got a brother here for life.
I guarantee it. I will be there. I don't know how many years from now, but the Gulf of Texas is my future home. So Port Bolivar, Crystal Beach, you better get ready for me, because I'm definitely coming at some time in my future.
Well, I'm really good with ribeyes and porterhouses. So.
Yeah, baby.
Well, thanks. Now I'm hungry.
I know. Hey, before you go, can you give her a quick siren?
Yes, you got to turn it.
A real quick siren, brother.
All right. Can you hear it?
That's awesome. I can hear it.
We can hear it.
Very cool. Very cool. Hey, thank you, brother.
Harris County. God bless all of you. And thank you so much, Craig. Look forward to stay in touch, please.
And we'll be right back.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Batch Boys.
We'll be back right after this.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADA in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Welcome back to Badge Boys, everybody. Awesome segment with Craig Darlow and the Harris County Sheriff's Department. That was an incredible story. Darren, thank you for bringing him on.
My pleasure.
I hope he wins that award. I know he's humble. I know he says he doesn't deserve it, but I will honor my word and I will be there in person to watch him get that. So it is time for Cop Talk, and we are going to switch gears a little bit. Part of doing what we do, we're still a little bit new. We're creeping up on 30 shows, and I feel like I'm getting my feet underneath this. But I won't lie, one of the least favorite things about doing a podcast is you kind of are under a little bit of pressure, a little bit of requirement to talk about what's the hot topic right now.
Difficult topics.
The hot topic right now is the mass shootings that just happened in El Paso and Dayton. And every one of our listeners out there is probably sick and freaking tired of hearing about it. But again, we are going to talk about it. And I have some very passionate feelings about what took place in both locations. But I'm going to kick it over to you because I've stressed this before, and I don't know if the audience believes this or not. Darren and I do not talk about our show prior to our show.
Nope.
We talk like I'm talking to somebody new each and every time, and that's what I love, because then we can both speak from the heart, and we can both be unprepared for what the other one's going to say. However, Darren did say something that made me kind of roll my eyes, that he said, I have the solution for this. So I, like everybody else, cannot wait to hear. And if I yell and scream at you when it's over, forgive me.
I will.
Let me hear it.
I will.
What is your solution to this absolute bullshit topic we're getting ready to talk about?
It is, in essence, what you just did, Jason. You kind of made a joke. The one thing that is the commonality in all these mass shootings is not guns. It's not assault rifles. 9/11, we saw that with carpet cutter, with the Oklahoma bombing,
yeah.
Fertilizer.
Yes.
We could go one through one of these horrible mass shootings, and unfortunately, they are coming way too fast and way too furious.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe there's
250 of them in 2019.
And the commonality, the one thing, so it's not the weapon, is because the weapon of choice is based on the horrific nature. And we can talk about, you know, the assault rifles and how much killing can be done in a split second and so forth. And that's a dialogue that's fair. But there's one thing that is the commonality is anger. I don't care what the ideology is. I don't care what the mental health issues are. The one thing that is constant is anger. And what we've seen in our society with Congress, with everything, is this divisiveness, this anger. And so the solution is we need to, as a society, we need to get thick skins, get over ourselves, laugh at ourselves, and joke more, scream less. And as angry as a topic as this is, and it's justifiably can make people angry, because how can you not be angry when children are getting killed? And
you can't. Something's wrong if you're not.
You have
you're
to
not
be
upset
right.
About this.
Right.
Something's wrong with you.
We are arguing about things that shouldn't be argued. I mean, you can't argue about the color blue. If someone likes blue, we shouldn't be arguing about right. That. We shouldn't be arguing about things where I can respect your opinion, which is why Jason and I don't share our thoughts as we come up to Cop Talk, because we want to organically talk about it. And so maybe through a conversation, through dialogue, we can kind of learn about the other side. Because right now, people are screaming, but they're not talking. They're not conversing. They're not listening. And that is my, is it a solution? Almost a joke in a solution, in the sense that can we ever, ever get to a point where we're all joking, we're all happy? No. But right now, my belief is that right now we're so angry, whether it's the wall, whether it's the left, whether it's the right, whether it's all these issues, that we are getting so angry. And when these, I'll say it, these wing nuts, these nuts on the side, right, whether it's ideology, whether it's terrorism, whether it's just mental health hatred, they pick up on that anger and then they use it for their agenda. But they're listening to our anger. We need to calm it down. That's just my take.
I've got something to interject too.
Yes, please.
You guys are former police officers. I am a member of the media. I've been in all forms of the media for over 32 years here. And I believe we can help solve a lot of these issues by the media putting a kibosh on showing pictures and naming the people that are committing these crimes. You're supposed to be focusing on the victims.
Yes.
Stop giving notoriety to these people that are causing these crimes. You can say 22-year-old male suspect gunned down all of these people. You don't have to name these people, because once you start naming them and giving them notoriety, then you're going to get the copycats who are going to keep doing this to gain the notoriety.
And I'm seeing the media doing a better job at that. Back in when I came in the police department in the 80s, we always talked about the killer, the murderers. We gave them, you know, as always, Lee Harvey Oswald. You know, we always give them a middle name. And now I've noticed with 9/11 especially, and with Oklahoma, we started really focusing on memorializing and honoring the fallen. And I love that. So I think, to your point, you're 100% right. But I think the media is getting better at that. I do. Jason?
Yeah, I probably have a different take. I think the media is a big part of the problem, because they are also pushing
the division,
their own agenda and their own division. And, you know, everybody hates cops until you need a cop, because the media, for the most part, is saying that. But when it comes to these mass shootings and the most recent ones, again, there's been 250 this year, but the most recent ones are El Paso and Dayton. And they're the same in the sense that a lot of people lost their lives. And that is where the tragedy lies. And that's where our attention needs to be focused. And I'm guilty of, the other day, I put on my Instagram, I was on a vacation, I'm loving life, and all of a sudden I'm like, Jesus, who am I to be sitting here bragging about being at a Cubs game, making memories with my son, and people are lying dead in a Walmart. People are lying dead in one of my favorite towns. I'm on a board of an incredible organization in Dayton. I'm going there in just a couple of weeks. I travel there 3 or 4 times a year. I love that community. People are lying dead. Families haven't chosen coffins. They haven't chosen plots. And all of a sudden you're hearing on the news people pushing their agenda, people trying to raise money, people saying this, people saying that. The guy who shot people at Walmart in El Paso, the kid who shot people in Dayton, the guy who shot people at the Pulse nightclub a few years ago, the kid who shot up Columbine High School, these are all different reasons. I get what you're saying, and I do agree with you. It's anger. But everything needs to be looked at for what it is. But most people want to just blame one side. And I'll be the first to tell you my opinions on this subject from guns. I'm a cop. I was in the military. I'm a Second Amendment guy. But I will tell you, assault rifles have no fucking place outside of SWAT and the military. They don't. And I'm a gun guy. But then you have the mental health. You do have the video games. You do have parenting. You do have discipline in schools. But you know what? My opinion doesn't matter, because you know what? I'm not going to run for office. I'm not narcissistic enough or arrogant enough to ever run for office. And the people who can make a difference, I genuinely believe that today, and I'm talking about right now today, the people who can make a difference do not want to. And I'm saying that from the city council all the way up to the president. They don't. They want to win. And they want to hate the other side. And that's what pisses me off the most. I mean, I'm guilty. I said, you know, prayers and my thoughts are with the victims, which is the stupidest freaking thing we can be saying. you almost have to say it because you seem callous.
And it's true.
Well, you seem callous if you don't. But aren't you sick and tired of reading a politician or somebody else saying, oh, prayers to the victims? I don't want to hear that anymore. How do we stop that? I don't want to go to the store after I leave this show today. I don't want my son calling me from a bar at his college saying, Dad, somebody's shooting. That 250 just in 2019, you can't try to wrap your mind around that. I know it's a number and I know it sounds like a lot, but when you actually think about it, it's hard to comprehend how you can't go to a Walmart in El Paso. You can't go to a bar in Dayton, Ohio right now. I've been to the people in the Midwest are the greatest people in the world. The ideology of the shooter in Dayton is completely different from the ideology of the shooter in El Paso. Let's not worry about that. Why did this person decide to pick up a gun and kill a bunch of strangers, innocent, random people? There's so many topics we can talk about, but the people who can make a difference, and I will say this freely, and to any politician who's listening out there, you can absolutely go to hell right now. There's not one of you from the city council all the way up to the president who truly gives a shit about the rest of us and our safety.
The word that comes to mind is but. When people talk about bless their hearts, there's always a time.
I'm from the South. You know what bless your heart means? You're stupid. That's what bless your heart means in the South.
And they'll talk about something that we all agree with, and then they say, but. And then your agenda comes into play. That's when their agenda comes to play. And then what they're doing is they're exploiting a horrible thing. Instead of trying to fix a problem, because we can all agree there's a problem. And when you look at all these mass shootings, you look at Las Vegas, we don't even have a reason. There's no ideology. There's nothing to lead into that. And that was horrific, and you can't prevent that. And here's the problem. We can't prevent something that's not preventable. We can't stop people because guess what? The genie's out of the bottle. Guns are out there. We can't. Now, to your point regarding assault rifles, yeah, I'm kind of with you, brother. I hate saying that because it's nice when we don't agree because we can kind of maybe see commonality or maybe we can see each other because sometimes the best view of a problem is on the fence when you look on both sides. But when I look at assault rifles, I don't have a problem with giving up my assault rifle. I will have no problem with that because I still have my gun. I can still protect myself.
Darren, you were in the Army.
I had an AR-15.
I was security police in the Air Force. I carried an M16 every day. They are designed for one thing.
Suppressive fire.
There's not a person. We live in Arizona. Hunting is a big thing, right?
It sure is.
People love to get their deer tags every fall or get their javelina tags, and they go hunting.
Sport.
Guess what they don't go hunting with?
You don't.
It is not designed for anything except to kill people. And so SWAT teams in police, of course they need them, and they're well-trained. The military needs them. And I'm tired of I told you I was going to get fired up. I do not care what the NRA says right now. Assault rifles, and I don't know what the answer is. I'm not going to run for office, so I don't get to introduce a bill saying ban. I'm not going to throw out any stupid things. I'm just saying I don't own an M16, AR-15, whatever you want to call them. I never would because they have no purpose. They have no place in society. But along with that, like you just said, if you want to kill a bunch of people, you're still able to get one. Cocaine's against the law. If I want to get high right now, I can go get cocaine in less than 5 minutes. It's not something you could just take away. But somebody has to find the term solution is too broad. We have to start.
Multi-prong.
Well, we have to start the process of fixing this because you and I are pretty close to the same age. This did not happen in the 70s and 80s. This was not going on. Mass killings has really increased. I mean, Columbine kind of
put it on the map.
That's the one I remember anyway. And it was out of high school. It was devastating. And those guys had their own, you know, agenda, whether they were bullied or being a little bit different than other kids. And they did what they did, and it did put it on the map. And then all of a sudden it was like, wow, we had a school shooting. You know, we have that old term. It's not really funny anymore about going postal, because postal workers, there was a span of about 5 years,
yes,
where postal workers would shoot up their offices. But over the years, now it truly is. When I leave this podcast today and I go to the grocery store, you have to legitimately look around. Like,
yes,
you have to wonder,
be vigilant.
Is somebody going to walk in here? Because what's the purpose of mass killing? To kill the most people possible. Going to a movie theater, going to a nightclub.
Las Vegas.
Going to a Walmart. Las Vegas. You know what? I was just in Chicago last week, and I was telling my son, he's 16. We went to dinner one night. We were downtown Chicago, and Lollapalooza is going on. And so I said, and I don't go a lot of places. I still live in a little bubble with my appearance, and I knew everybody at Lollapalooza is going to be freaking higher than a kite, and they were going to annoy the piss out of me. And I'm just, I don't run in those crowds. But I'm like, you know what? Let's walk down there. I want you to see something. So we walked down to Lollapalooza, 100,000 people. And what I told my son was, you don't know this, but the Las Vegas shooter that killed 50-something people in Vegas, prior to that, he had booked two rooms in Chicago overlooking Lollapalooza.
Yeah.
And that was his target. Turns out, because he lived just outside of Vegas, it was easier for him to transport the guns one at a time,
yeah,
you know, over the course of hours in a suitcase. So he decided not to follow through with the Chicago thing. He ended up doing it in Vegas. Every situation has its own reasons and its own timing. And we can throw a blanket across them. They're horrible. Of course, I don't want to be affected by one. I don't want my family affected by one. And I don't want anybody else. You know, I saw the Ohio governor the other day, and I'll be honest with you, I love the great state of Ohio. I do not know if their governor is a Democrat or Republican, and I don't give a shit. But he said a statement to the news, and maybe it was new, it was emotional, but he said, this is one of those tragedies that you hope never comes to your state. How about this is one of those tragedies you hope never happens anywhere?
Period.
How are you saying you hope it doesn't come to your state? You want it to happen in another state? Kiss my ass. This is what the politicians are saying, and if, sorry, Robin.
I'm loving your passion, man.
No, I get, this stuff fires me up because, again, somebody who can help make a difference, they're not going to.
They're just
going to
say, but.
They're going to say, you're right. And like my dad said, everything before the word but doesn't
matter.
No,
thank you.
Mean anything.
I love your dad.
Just shut the hell up.
Absolutely.
It's not going to happen until it personally affects them.
And so, to Jason's point, if we can't depend on our leadership, our politicians, because they're bipartisan. They're not partisan. If we can't depend on them.
Who is bipartisan?
They're not.
No, I'm saying, yeah,
they're
thank
not.
You. I was like,
yeah, it's partisanship.
Hold on.
We're not
they're
bipartisan.
Not.
So
we have to win, and we have to
What we need
money.
To do is we need to bring down the anger. We need to calm everyone down, stop being divisive, being able to see each other's point of views, and not being so angry, because what we're doing is we're creating an angry atmosphere for those nutcases, because there's too many of them. The nutcase in Las Vegas was different than a nutcase in the Boston Marathon. It was an ideology.
It truly is.
They're all different.
And
there's
is.
no pun intended, there's no magic bullet that's going to solve this problem. It's a multi-pronged approach, but I think it all starts with the vision, because that's the one thing I have seen a difference in. And we're old enough, I'm almost 60, where people are angrier now. They really are. We need to get over ourselves, laugh at ourselves. And with that in mind, I have some funny headlines. I'm going to take this moment where we're going to look at some funny headlines, have fun at ourselves, because
guess
what? Right?
So I can breathe?
Right?
I can stop yelling and screaming?
And more importantly, I brought in a special guest. Yeah. We have with us Don Steinmetz, who is a stand-up comic. He makes fun of me all the time. He's with Stir Crazy, which is a nightclub out here, but he goes all over the country, and I have not talked with him really in detail about these, but Don, welcome to our show, my friend.
Well, thank you very much for having me here.
And before I even begin, you have some shows coming up in mid-August coming up?
Yes, I'll be featuring out at Stir Crazy Comedy Club at Westgate from August 15th, 16th, and 17th. There's a show on Thursday night at 7, and then two shows on Friday and Saturday night.
And my experiment is this. If you can come in now, after this heated conversation and you can make us laugh, then there is hope for the rest of this world, is there not?
There is plenty of hope, because smile and laugh should be your desire every day when you wake up.
It is contagious.
Every day when you wake up, you should want to be inspired. Laughing will inspire you. Coming together, no matter what your race, age, gender, no matter if you have kids when you're 18, no matter if you have kids when you're 60, no matter what tragedies you've suffered, if you can laugh, that is a common theme that we can all agree. Who doesn't want to laugh?
Thank you.
You know, Jason, I start my morning out by a good laugh by looking at myself in the mirror naked. So.
Hey, I within 5 minutes of waking up every day, I guarantee you I have something that I find comedic. And it will start off the day. It is important.
So instead of yelling and arguing over the headlines that make you angry, let's laugh at them. This headline, and I'm not going to say who it comes from because I do a radio show with them. The headline is Arizona AG, which is Attorney General. So Arizona Attorney General announces sex trafficking training program for tourism industry. What would you say to that, Don?
I would think those pink Jeep tours are going to get quite interesting.
I love it. We're going to move on.
This is not a class I'm going to.
Can you imagine that?
This is going to be called the Happy Ending Vacation Destination. I can see our state government have a web link right to porn.com. So this is going to be a great state, ladies and gentlemen. Break down them walls. Everybody want to come here.
Arizona Pornhub. The next headline, Tempe Police, quote, positive ticking campaign sparks confusion.
Oh, that's a lot of passive-aggressive police work, I say. Wouldn't you say? I'm going to give you a ticket for this, but I'm also going to give you a nice back rub.
Yes.
Next headline for Don is Texas restaurant kicks out police officer for having a gun.
Yeah, well, it's not the... It's not the size of the gun. It's how you use it at the restaurant, I always say. I can imagine, I don't have much to say about that because it's Texas. I imagine the waitresses have guns. That's what I think about
Texas.
Yeah,
it's in Texas. Yeah, seriously. Like San Antonio. Yeah, everybody has a gun.
If he's a cop, he has a gun.
You're a double D? No, I'm a .22 caliber. Yes.
You know, if he's a cop, he has a gun.
Yeah, exactly. He probably has 30 of them.
We didn't talk about that last week, Darren, but I hope Fogo de Chao has fired that manager.
Thank you.
Because guess what? If the mass shooting guy shows up at Fogo de Chao, that same little manager is going to be screaming, oh, please, please help me, please help me. Right. And so hopefully he got fired.
Be honest with you, I was just surprised that an officer was at a restaurant that I cannot pronounce the name.
Well, and hey, that place is expensive, and I'm going to throw.
They don't even have donuts.
I love. We have a Fogo de Chao here. I love it, and I'll never eat there again. I'm happy to throw it under the bus. Their apologies mean nothing. A uniformed police officer, and they were like, "You have to leave because you have a gun."
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
I have a gun. I'm in uniform.
And the last stupid, twisted but true headline is City disbands police department after protests, now community upset with recent violent crime increase.
I think that's wonderful. I think the judges can now put people on community service as police officers in that community. I think it'll work out great.
I think that is...
Call a thug. Hey, he knows how to handle stuff.
There you go.
Know what I'm saying?
That's perfect.
What brain trust said, let's get rid of police department. Maybe crime will go down.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Insane. That's great. Don, thank you for coming in. And again,
thank you.
Where will you be?
I'll be at Stir Crazy Comedy Club out the Westgate. You could look it online at StirCrazyComedyClub.com, pardon me, on August 15th, 16th,
I will
17th.
Be there. I am coming.
I'm there too.
I am coming, and I'm telling you right now, please, 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 you got to make fun of me.
Oh, yeah, great.
You're like, look at this.
No pressure. No pressure.
Look, you got to come over. Like, look.
Everyone loves Jason, and you're going to make fun of him. Good luck with that.
He's got to be like, look at that dude in the eighth row. Gosh. Are you kidding me right now? He's trying to raise his eyebrows, but he doesn't have any, so... You got to find something. You have a couple of weeks to get ready and prepare something. But if I leave that show and you haven't made fun of me, I'm getting my money back.
Isn't Jason a protected class from you? At some point?
He is in my world.
No, he is in my world, my friend. No, I'm not. Yes. You got to make fun of me, but you're going to have to give me my ticket
and
reimbursement.
Also, Don, can you come back and can you be a guest? We want to hear from you.
I would love to come back. You guys are awesome. I enjoy your conference. You guys are fantastic. Great subjects.
Thanks, guys. We will be right back with more stupid suspects and... a heroic story of the week that, of course, is close to my heart as always.
I love it.
Be right back.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Batch Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADA in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Batch Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Batch Boys.
What a powerful show we've had. We've gone the gamut. We've talked about crashes and mayhem and saving lives. And then we talked about mass shootings and need to, you know, be outraged, but have it directed at something like the bad guys. And we've been all over the place. And this is a perfect last segment because we go to Jason with the heroic headline, something powerful. We go back to me with stupid, disgusting idiots. Yeah. And then we leave it with an inspirational message. We take you up, we take you down, we take you all around. So Jason, with that in mind, bring us some peace, my friend, your heroic headline.
We took a little break from in between segments
with
the commercial. And I am still trying to...
decompress.
My blood is still boiling. I'm still a little fired up. So
breathe.
But my heroic headline, and we were talking about these mass shootings, but again, I am dedicated on this show to the heroism and the positivity of law enforcement, of course. And I said this before, cops, you get a call. It's almost nightly. Hot call. Guy with a gun, this, that, and the other. Never, ever, ever does a cop think, okay, this could be my last call. Maybe I should text a loved one. That's not how we think, ever. And I don't know what the public thinks who hasn't been through the training or doesn't wear the uniform. That's not how cops think. It's just not. You are trained and you go into action, for lack of better terms. However, when it comes to these mass shootings, I think it's a little bit different, because I think in the back of our mind, we're all like, wow, this could happen anywhere, anytime, to any of us. And if you are a police officer and you get that call, have you been trained right? Do you understand how to make entry? Do you understand how to be there alone versus with 10 of your callings? The SWAT team is not, they're not going to be there in 30 seconds like you are. So all I've been thinking about the last few days, and again, there's a ton of heroic stories from civilians to families to the police officers in all these situations. But the one that really resonated with me was the one in Dayton, Ohio, because...
Loved it.
We are talking about an area of town. And I visit Dayton a lot. I'm there at least four times a year. I absolutely love, love, love Dayton. It's a great town if you've never been there. It's a great community. And I know exactly where the shooting took place. It's a very populated place. And you saw the age range of the victims who were out there. It wasn't just about college kids partying. And it's summertime. There was a lot of different people.
Melting pot.
From the time the shooting started, this is a guy with body armor and an assault rifle. From the time he started shooting until the time he is dead is less than 1 minute. I understand that 9-10 people lost their lives. 15 to 16 people are still fighting for their lives as we speak in the hospital. And even if they survive, their lives are forever changed emotionally, mentally, and physically. But this guy could have killed hundreds and hundreds of people. We are talking about 2 to 3 police officers who, I don't know their training. I don't know their background. I don't know their ages. I don't know their names. I don't know their races. I don't care. They got a call or they heard the gunshots. They responded, and somehow they were able to shoot and kill a guy using just their pistols, for an old-fashioned term, with body armor and an assault rifle, not caring if they went home that night, not caring about anything, not thinking about anything except stopping the threat. And that is what we are trained to do. We're not trained to kill. We're not trained to do this. We're not trained to do that. We are trained to stop the threat. And they did it in less than 60 seconds.
Wow.
These guys are so heroic. It's hard to really put it into words. And I want to give a shout out to them, the community of Dayton. Again, we're going to hear stories as time goes by about what took place in El Paso. I know there was a lot of heroic efforts. A
lot of heroism
that took place. There truly is. We haven't heard about those yet. But for the purposes of this show, Badge Boys, we focus on the positivity of law enforcement. And those Dayton officers did their job in an unexpected second notice, and they got it done in seconds. And I give them a lot of credit because as horribly as I feel for the victims, there's a lot of people who are going to be able to tell their stories, and they're not actual gunshot victims because of these officers. So that's just mad respect that they could do that. I can't imagine. I was a cop. I can't imagine being in that situation. You have to shoot. You have to engage with a guy who's got an assault rifle, and you've got – it might feel good to have a gun on your hip – your little 45 doesn't match up against an assault rifle with a guy who has a lot of rounds. So they are definitely my heroes this week, and I love you guys. Thank you, thank you, thank you for serving your community, your calling, and making all of law enforcement look pretty damn good right now.
I love that one. That's perfect. Those officers saved lives. It's just that simple.
It's
so many lives.
All right, tell me something horrible.
I'm going to make you laugh. I'm going to make you laugh three times. You ready for this?
I'm always ready.
The first suspect story is Michael Harrell, 54 years old, presented a demand note to a teller during a bank robbery in Cleveland, Ohio. The teller complied with the demand note, which was handed to him for an undisclosed amount. An FBI official confirmed that the note Harrell handed the teller ultimately led to his arrest. And again, we're talking about forensics, we're talking about DNA, we're talking about fingerprints. Nope, not at all. The stupid suspect had his name and address on the note. He had used a note from a prior bank receipt, had his address, had information, and that's what led to his arrest. So hours later, I might add. So that was stupid suspect story number one.
This is why being a cop is fun, right there.
That's exactly it. Okay, this is not only stupid suspect, this is bad luck stupid suspect. A hapless thief in Rio de Janeiro tried to rob a woman last Saturday night and got a whole lot more than he had bargained for. The victim, by the name of Pollyanna Viana, was waiting for an Uber outside her apartment. When this suspect approached her, he made some kind of ruse how he wanted to see what time it was. And then at one point he said to her, "I want your phone." When I saw him, he sat next to me and asked me, and I said no. And then she proceeded to kick his butt because she was a UFC fighter.
Yeah.
She was a kick ass. I'm handing right now. Woo. I'm handing Rock and Rob in the picture. Look at the suspect.
Yeah. Oh, he my his ass God.
He got
wow.
whooped.
Yes.
He got whooped.
Check
bad.
This out, Jason. Woo.
He got pummeled.
Is that the most epic oops
right?
She
yes.
just opened up a can of whoop ass
so
on that boy.
Stupid for doing a crime. But
that's like the end of that. The end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, where the guy says, "Choose wisely."
He did not choose wisely.
He did not choose wisely. That's awesome.
And then the last stupid suspect story, which is my favorite, Ashley. Anytime you have a middle name, you know that someone did something stupid. Ashley Beth Rowland, 23, was accused on July 31st of stealing $5,000 from the apartment of a man she had been staying with for about a week. I guess it wasn't true love. The man, sorry.
A week?
Yeah.
They made it a week? All right.
The man told the Louisiana West Monroe Police Department that while he was showering, Rowland swiped his cash and left. She allegedly confessed to stealing the man's money when he left the apartment. So she was arrested. Documents in a police report show that during a search, They discovered $6,233 and a clear plastic bag of roughly 1 gram of meth on her when doing the search. Now, Jason, when people are caught with stuff on them, what's the first thing they say when you catch somebody with dope?
These aren't my pants.
That's what she said. The problem was, this was not just any old search. This wasn't a search on her. This was a search in her.
Oh, no.
They found a roll of bills inside her vagina,
what?
Along with the drugs, and she said it wasn't hers. So it does beg the question. First of all, this was over $6,000, and I don't know what kind of denominations, but even if it was $100 bills, that's a huge roll of money.
To hide up there?
Right? Yeah, so how big was that? Right? How big is her vault?
Did you hear Robin's voice?
Yes. $6,000 and meth, a gram of meth. The second thing that comes to mind is if her story is true and it wasn't her meth and someone stashed that in her gash, then we have a cash stashing gash person out there. This is a new crime trend. That is my stupid suspect story. And Jason, I'm gonna stall for a little bit because Jason lost
He's got to recover.
He's going to have to recover.
I'm taking a drink and you say gash. Jesus H. Christ, Darren. God bless him. Did you see me drink wine over here?
I did. I planned it perfectly.
Yes. Good God. And now I'm supposed to do an inspirational
you
close.
You are.
How about I just say goodbye?
Oh, my goodness. How do we recover?
Oh, my God. How about I just, I'm going to have to wait and see if I get the phone call later from Dave Pratt going, yeah, you're fired.
I'm in charge. You don't have to worry. Okay. I'll be the buffer.
All right. My inspirational close this week, it's going to be so random and all over the place, but I always talk about things that are new and things that affect me. And so this has a lot of parts to it. And growing up here in Phoenix, I'm a lifelong Chicago Cubs fan. Watching WGN growing up, saw Mark Grace's first game as a rookie. Love my absolute favorite player ever, Ryan Sandberg. Got to meet him last year. Andre Dawson, Rick Sutcliffe, just things from the 80s that I great memory. So one of my bucket lists was always to go to not only a Chicago Cubs game, but to go to a day game. Because for those of you old enough to remember, the first night game ever, the last stadium to get lights, was 8-8 of 88. And I grew up watching day games, so I was dedicated to, if I ever go to Wrigley Field, I'm going to a day game. Well, I got the opportunity, as you know. I left right after our show last week, and I took my youngest son, 16 years old, to Chicago. Never been there. I've been to the airport. I fly into Midway all the time on Southwest Airlines. But we went to 3 Chicago Cubs game, went on the architectural tour down the Chicago River, which if you have not done that, oh my God, it was one of the greatest 90-minute experiences of my life. There is nothing
amazing
like the city of Chicago.
I agree.
There's nothing. And I love New York City. It's a great place to visit.
That competition there was a heck of a competition.
The architecture and the history from Chicago. For those of you who know about the Chicago fire that happened in 1871, literally the entire city burned down. Where that on Mrs. O'Leary's farm, the old
cow
yes.
story.
Do you know what is on the site of her farm right now?
Mm-mm. No.
The Chicago Fire Training Academy.
I love it.
Who doesn't have a sense of humor,
right,
in the city of Chicago?
Thank you, Chicago.
My answer, you know what I got out of this? And I came home to read on the news that this was the deadliest weekend in the city of Chicago. Now, we hear on the news all the time, people getting bashed in Chicago. It's murder capital of the country. The police are getting hammered. I told you a little while ago about going to Lollapalooza, and every corner we went to, I stopped and I talked to the cops.
Good for you.
I said, thank you. I said, I'm a retired Phoenix police officer. Took a picture with them, thanked them for their service. Everything that we saw on the Miracle Mile, downtown, Wrigleyville, going to Chicago Cubs game, Chicago is not what you see and hear about on TV.
Thank you. It is
an incredible...
There's a lot of love there.
There is a ton of love there. People were so happy. People were so nice. I was there for 4 days, and I never heard an unkind word. I never
Good
saw anything but smiles. And I left there I mean, I got to cross off a big thing on my bucket list.
Wrigley Field.
And guess what? The Cubs swept the Brewers, and we got to sing Go, Go Cubs Go, Hey Chicago. One of the greatest songs ever. 30,000 people in the stands. Nobody leaves. You know, here
I
love my D-backs more than anything, but when the game's over, it's like, hey, good job, guys.
And exodus.
We all leave. Chicago Cubs party. Games, people don't leave. They sing that song, and you sing it together. I posted some videos online, but I just left there feeling so good about the world. And my son, I said, you know, had I done what you just did at 16, it might have changed my life. I don't know that I would have joined the military. I don't know that I would have went on to do other things. It would have been life-changing as far as maybe going to college there or do it. Chicago is a great town, and I love you guys. Thank you for your hospitality. But the inspirational part is do a bucket list. Find something and go do it. And I'm telling you, you will not regret it because it has filled me with so much inspiration throughout this week. And yes, I got through yelling and screaming 15 minutes ago.
That's just passion.
About other things. I am very passionate about all signs. But God bless you, Chicago. God bless everybody out there. Do what you love. Do something fun. Put a smile on your face and make memories. Because you know what? When you do it, those can never be taken away from you. We will see you all next week. Thank you very much.
Batch Boys. Thanks for listening to Batch Boys. Stories, insights, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Batch Boys. Heard weekly and worldwide on Star Worldwide networks and all mobile devices. Batch Boys.